Jy luister na die stem van die Kaap op 91.3 en 95.8 FM stereo.
Good evening, Khuyanand, Moweni, and a hearty welcome to the Shahida Kali Show. Tonight, very excited, also, you know, feeling good to be back. I've been away for a few weeks. We continue with our discussion, and our discussion focuses tonight on child abuse. And you know, when I was thinking of it, I'm thinking, you know, all these tough subjects kind of fall in my lap, and I'm actually sometimes wishing that I can do those lighter programs that I did in the past. So I have a guest in the studio, social worker at Childline, Michelle Skippers, and she is here to share her knowledge and her guidance and her expertise with us. Michelle, good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening, Shahida. Thank you so much for inviting Charlotte and for having me here.
And you know, I must just say thank you because this is family time. I always appreciate my guests taking the time out to come to the program because it's a time when you would like to be with your family, right? So, you know, having the focus on you being from Childline, the first question to ask is there's often this confusion about is Childline and Lifeline one organization? Please tell me.
Okay. So Lifeline, initially before we split now, Lifeline, we were Lifeline Childline Western Cape. Lifeline is now an organization on its own, and Childline is an organization on its own. We obviously still work together. So Lifeline is more provides telephonic counseling to adults. They service adults. And they do certain courses, they do personal growth courses, they do counseling skills courses. So if you want to become a lay counselor, you would follow that process. And where Childline specifically works with children between the ages of 3 years and 17 years of age, children who has been sexually abused, children who has gone through any form of trauma. We also do bereavement counseling. We also do court preparation for children, so specifically our sexual abuse victims who needs to go to court. We prepare them for that process. And other services that we do, which will fall into our community involvement, would be going out to schools and doing like prevention and awareness programs with learners, teaching them about the body safety, you know, simple things like what is good touches, what is not so good touches, what to do if you are touched in a way that makes you feel uncomfortable, that makes you feel not good. What is your right? What is your process to follow? We also handle issues, you know, an issue that is quite big in our country, bullying. So we do bullying workshops with learners as well.
My goodness, you do a lot.
We do a lot. Yeah. We do a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm just basically trying to briefly sum up what we do. So there's a lot. We also do parental skills workshops because, as you know, when working with a child, if we're following an holistic process, we want to heal this child holistically. We cannot work with a child in isolation and disregard the parent. Parents also need to be educated on better understanding their children, and especially if a child has gone through sexual abuse, that child changes.
Yeah.
So mom needs to be equipped with the necessary skills and information and knowledge, but mom also needs to be held in that process because that's quite a traumatic process for her herself.
Yeah.
And I'm not specifically just speaking about mom, we're speaking about caregivers in general. So whether it be the grandmother, the grandfather who's supporting this child through this process.
Okay.
So there's quite a lot that Childline does.
Okay. So I just want to come back to trauma. You say children of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So children of trauma would include what?
Okay. So trauma could include a child witnessed a murder.
Okay.
That's a traumatic event for a child. That can change a child's perception on life, or it can create certain feelings within a child. A child who was maybe hijacked, exposed, maybe a robbery victim. Trauma could also be if a child has gone through, parents has divorced. Now, with child, and we're quite clear on this, that we would see the child after the divorce procedure has been done with mom and dad, and then the child would come to us and we would have counseling sessions, because now the child's sense of home and family, that has changed. So life as the child knew it before, that has changed. So the child could be exhibiting certain emotions or behavioral issues, or it could have affected the child's academic performance at school, because that's what trauma does. It affects on an emotional, a mental, and also a developmental level. Mm-hmm. So then the child would come and we would work with the child. The child didn't receive therapeutic counseling from us, when one of the social workers.
My goodness, you know, I just have renewed respect for Childline. I think you cover such a broad spectrum. Mm. And, you know, when we're thinking of child abuse, you don't always unpack the different areas that you would be covering. But, you know, you mentioned before we even started the program that a huge percentage of your cases would be children who have been sexually abused.
Yes.
I just want to ask you, of the children whom you are seeing at Childline, are these children mostly who come through a court process or any specific type of process, or do you see a huge percentage of children that are referred to you by other professionals or even a parent who phones Childline?
Okay. So basically, in a nutshell, it's all of the above, Shahida.
Okay.
So we could have a parent coming in, we would call them walk-in clients.
Yeah.
Mom comes in, mom found out child has been sexually assaulted or child has been raped.
Mm-hmm.
Mom would come in, mom doesn't know what to do. Mom has seen that the child has changed.
Yeah.
Child has maybe moved from a child that was outgoing, socialized a lot, an extrovert personality. Now all of a sudden child is more withdrawn. The child's academic performance has dropped.
Yeah.
Teachers complaining about the child, mom doesn't know what to do. So then we would see the child. Other organizations refer to us as well.
Okay.
So, for example, Department of Social Development, you're aware of what kind of work they are doing. They do mostly, you know, issues of neglect and physical abuse, those kind of issues they would cover. So when it comes to a case of where a child, they have knowledge of that a child has been sexually abused, they would refer to us.
Mm-hmm.
The police would refer to us.
Okay.
Other wealthy organizations like ASIFIAFIA, like FAMSA.
Mm-hmm.
So all the other role players and all the other NGOs, whether it be or governmental organizations, would refer to us.
Okay.
But many cases when it's being referred to us, the case has been reported.
Okay.
That's one of our first things that we need to do as a social worker. Has the case been reported?
Okay.
Because, you know, as it's stated in the Children's Act, that any person, emphasis being on that, any person who has knowledge of a child that has been sexually abused is responsible to report that.
Yeah.
So there's a range of organizations and people that refers to us.
Okay. So it brings me to, and I know that you are based in the Mitchells Plain area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then I think about your staff complement. I'm thinking, oh my word, do you have a backlog? Do you have, because these would all be emergency urgent cases.
Yes.
So do you have a waiting, period? Because my goodness, how do you fit in everyone and, you know, be able to attend to all of these, especially when you're working with a range from 3 to 17.
Yes.
You're covering a lot of children.
Yes. You know, Shahida, that is one of our challenges.
I can
when
only
it comes,
imagine.
When it comes, so we do have a waiting list. So we have, firstly, Charlton has 3 centers. So I'm based at the Mitchell's Plain Center. Then we have an office in Wynberg. And then we also have an office in Tigerberg.
Okay.
We do have a waiting list. So when an organization, for example, like Department of Social Development refers to us, they are aware that we have a waiting list. So mm-hmm. they would inform the parent or the caregiver that this case has been reported to Childline, but do not expect now that the social worker is going to call you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Be patient. It's going to take some time. And that's the sad reality of it. And it's part of, you know, working for an NGO. It's not that we don't want to help everyone coming through. It's just that we don't have the human resources.
Yes.
To be able to, you know, give more speedily responses on when we get a case coming through to us.
Yeah.
And we'd inform the parents. If we see that this child has been on the waiting list for quite a long period of time, then our administrator or even one of our social workers will call the parent up and to say that we have received your referral. We haven't forgotten about you.
Yeah.
I think that's important, communicating with the caregivers.
Yeah.
Because then they know. Then they know. I've picked up that they get very frustrated when they don't know what's going on.
And concerned because I think the immediate worry is have they forgotten about
me? Yes, has the and what we've also, you know, in my experience, and I'm speaking from my experience of being a social worker at Childline, is that not getting information from the investigating officer, maybe about where's my child with regards to my child's case, you know, those type of things.
Yeah.
So sometimes we need to fill that gap. We need to call the investigating officer. We need to go personally to FCS and find out what's happening with this child's case.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to do that because when we look at ourselves as being social workers, what does that mean? You advocates for children, for children's rights, right?
Yeah.
The child doesn't have that voice. You sometimes need to be that voice. So, yes, we do have a waiting list, but we'd make contact. We try to inform the parents so that they know that we will respond to you as soon as possible.
Okay. If a walk-in parent comes to you, so when an organization has referred a child to you, it probably would be a better match because they will know who are the children that you are accepting.
Yes.
But then a walk-in parent could be a parent whose child is, or a child is neglected. This could be a granny bringing a child in. The child is very neglected.
Mm-hmm.
You often see this with in families where there's drug abuse going.
Yes.
And you might realize that this is a child not really suited for our organization. Mm. And I'd like you to hold the thought because I'd like to, for you to respond in terms of what then happens, how will such a case be managed? Because ultimately, that granny would be hugely worried. I always say people come to you, and at the time when they come to you, it's when they are at the tether, and they it's kind of like a last resort, and they are very, very worried. So the question was, if a walk-in parent or grandparent, as I said, walks in, and let's take the issue of the child is neglected because of the parents using drugs, etc., and you now, you know, get the child. And this child might not be suited to what you cover. What will that process be like?
Okay. So firstly, for me, if a grandma walks in, I would want to know who is the caregiver of the child now. So is mom still in the child's life? Or the parent that is the alleged parent that has abandoned the child, or has grandmother taken over the parental role? First, I would like to know, I want to ask that. If it is a case where the child is still living with mom, then I would call in Department of Social Development and refer mom to Department of Social Development, because Department of Social Development does home visitations.
Okay.
Which Childline doesn't do home visitations.
Okay.
Our clients come to us, so we provide the therapeutic counseling to the child.
Yes.
if it's a case where grandma, for example, says, but this child is now staying with me, mom is on the streets, I don't know where mom is, I would have a conversation with, you know, trying to determine for how long has child been in grandmother's care. What changes has grandmother seen within the child?
Mm-hmm.
What emotional changes has grandmother seen? What behavioral changes has grandmother seen? And because that is so traumatic.
Yeah.
So that would fall under trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So then we would provide counseling services to the child. Okay. If it is, for example, a case of where the child suffers from substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Substance abuse is not Childline's area of expertise.
Okay.
And the child would then possibly need to go to a rehab center. So okay. I would refer the child to a rehab center.
Okay. So you do appropriate referrals if Childline is not the appropriate place for the child to be seen.
We do that. We will provide grandmother, because that's the example that we're using, we will provide grandmother with where she can go.
Okay.
We would even go as far as calling. So if it is a drug-related issue, I would call the rehab center. Mm-hmm. I would say that I'm sitting here with so-and-so. She's having this problem, because now I also need to find out what is their intake process,
mm-hmm.
right? Can she just walk in? Or she need to make an appointment? Those are something that I would relay that information to grandmother, and then grandmother will take it further. We would also even go as far as in maybe following up, just
sure.
to see, you know, has she been helped? Has she received the necessary help for the child?
Yeah.
And, so we would do a follow-up process.
Okay. I think I was probably, one of the experiences that I had was with a lady who contacted NICRO,
okay.
for example, and saw the NICRO social worker with an adult child, and it was also drug abuse related.
Mm-hmm.
And this lady was almost shocked in a very good way when she saw the social worker the morning,
okay.
and the afternoon the social worker gave her a call to ask if she's okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's,
you know,
what we need.
Isn't it amazing?
That is
this
beautiful.
this woman, I think it was like when you come away from it and you say, thank God in the world there's still good
mm-hmm.
people. You know, that for me was almost a beautiful example of feeling you've been heard and, you know, people do care.
And that's important for a parent and for a caregiver or anyone, actually, humanity in its whole,
yeah.
that you want to feel heard. But specifically with the case of where it's dealing with children, or when mom or grandma is just like at its wits end, they don't know what
yeah.
more to do. They are desperate.
Yeah.
You need to don't rush. We don't rush in just referring. We'll call them into our office. We'll have a chat with grandma.
Yes.
We'll find out how grandma is doing as
yeah.
well. Because remember, this is affecting grandma as well.
Yes.
So even though we want to get help for the child, we also need to see if grandma's also emotionally taking care of herself in order for her to take care of her child. So it seems so important what you're saying right now, feeling heard, feeling that, you know, there are people that really want to help you. Someone listened to me, and someone didn't just send me from this place to that place and said,
right.
you know, I can't help you, go there.
Yeah.
But someone tried and heard
you. And you know, what is so great is when people leave from your desk and feel a sense of hope.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so important, eh? Just if you're able to give a person a sense of hope.
Sure.
So I've received a message, and I just want to connect, you know, my next discussion and what we'll focus on. But I'm also looking at, oh my word, isn't it time for us to actually break for the period of the late evening prayer? Oh my word, they're telling me in 22nd time. So what we'll do is we will read and attend to the message that had been sent through about the person who used anatomical dolls. I refer to a message that I'd received. I'm going to read it for you. The person writes, I facilitated child abuse awareness and prevention workshops with the anatomical dolls from grade R to grade 3, and was astounded to see how many learners have in some way or the other been abused. And either it is not believed by the adult, this is such an important point this person's making, or the abuse has gone unreported. The person says Childline does amazing work. Thank you for the message. Thank you for praising and expressing gratitude towards Childline, because I too think that they're doing amazing work. And Michelle, it's a direct compliment to the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
It's great. You're welcome. It's great that people will choose as a profession social working, because my goodness, it is such a vitally important profession for people to go into. But let's get back to disclosure.
Yes.
When you find yourself doing, you know, a workshop at a school, what happens when children could come up to you and disclose?
Okay. So disclosures, so when we speak about disclosures, we...
And does it happen?
It does happen. So you get two types of disclosures. You get the accidental disclosure, and then you get the purposeful disclosure.
So if you can explain that to
us. Yes, I'm going to do that for you. So the accidental disclosure would be where the child is maybe caught in the act of the abuse, right? Mom walks in, mom sees Uncle Johnny from next door having sex with the child. That's accidental disclosure. Or child is even caught in maybe an act of sexual play, maybe playing with him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe, for example, specifically speaking to what the lady sent the email on, is that while someone is talking about the abuse.
Yeah.
So I've gone to schools and mentioned earlier, but we would do prevention and awareness programs. So the little ones, we would use the anatomical dolls, which is basically a doll that looks exactly like a child. So it would have the private parts of the child.
Yeah.
And I've had a few instances where a child has come up to me. Strangely enough, one incident where two girls that was the friend of the victim came up and said that so-and-so was touched by her uncle, but she's a bit shy, but she disclosed to her friend.
Okay.
So sometimes, many times, we find that children would not disclose to mom and dad or the caregiver.
Yes.
They would disclose to someone else.
Okay.
And then with the permission of the two girls, I would ask them, do you think she would want to talk to me? And then they would go out, as an example now, they would go out and they called her in, and then I spoke to her, and I asked her, has she told anyone about it? Because that's what we need to determine. Is this the first time she has disclosed?
Yes.
Has a case been made? Has she received counseling?
Mm-hmm.
So if it is, for example, in a school setting, there is a, in some schools, there's a social worker, or otherwise there's a social worker from Department of Social Development, or even the principal or the teacher would then refer.
Okay.
But in a case with me where the child has now told me, I would need to find out, does mommy know, does daddy know about this, and then we will take the process from there.
Okay.
So that does happen. Sometimes after children receiving education on what sexual abuse is, and they're like, oh, but that happened to me.
Right.
And then they have the bravery to speak up.
Yeah.
But it's not an easy process.
No, it's not easy to do,
Shaida.
For me, one of the things that breaks my heart is when a child would have disclosed and a parent would not have believed.
Oh,
that for me is so
happens.
Yeah. It is so
that
so
happens,
so sad.
Especially if it's maybe dad being accused of being the alleged perpetrator.
Yes.
Maybe it's mom's boyfriend.
Yes.
Mom cannot believe that. Mom has love for this man.
Yeah.
She has a certain perception. She upholds him to a certain standard. So she's like, this cannot be true. This is not him. He would never do this.
Yeah.
I've had issues. And that is very hard to work with that child.
Yeah.
Because now the child is being blamed for possibly breaking up the relationship between mom and dad.
Yes.
Child is feeling like, I should have rather just kept my mouth, because now I've now jeopardized my relationship with my mother.
Yes.
Sometimes child, they need to be removed from the mom and need to go and stay with grandma.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't understand all the effects that it has, the ripple effects of this on this child.
Yeah.
So it's hard.
It's very, very hard. And it brings me to another issue. Under which circumstances would you usually, I use the word usually, feel and get to the decision that a child needs to be removed from the family?
Okay. So That is more for Department of Social Development or okay. organizations that does statutory work.
Okay.
So we don't do child removals.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can refer then, or I can report the matter to a social worker at Department of Social Development and say that I'm a bit concerned here about this. Maybe the child came for counseling to me,
yes.
and child is still in the presence, in the care of mom, and child mm-hmm. has divulged certain information to me, and I feel either the child is being neglected, child has maybe disclosed to mom, child has been sexually abused, mom has done nothing about it. The onus then lies on me. To either report, I would first like to call in mom and to empower her and to empower and give information that you had knowledge of this.
Yeah.
So, and then I would take it to the act and tell her what the law says, because it's going to be a bad reflection on her when they find out she knew that her child was sexually abused and she did nothing about it.
Yeah.
If mom is still, I'm not going to do anything about it, then I would need to report it. The social worker would then need to report it.
Mm-hmm.
And
you will refer to social Department of Social Development, because they would have to do home visits and take
and,
the process
and do
from
the assessment.
There.
But when it comes to sexual abuse, I would report the case on the child's behalf. That would be at the police station. The police yeah. station would then bring in the officer from FCS
mm-hmm.
and they would see the child, they would, there's a whole process. Child needs to go to the district surgeon, needs to be examined,
yeah.
child's statement needs to be taken. There's quite a process with regards to sexual abuse.
Yeah.
But specifically to answer your question, Shahida, I would refer to Department of Social Development and they would need to go to that mother's home to see what's happening there, what's the dynamics in the family,
yeah.
Do an assessment, and they would then determine if this child is in danger,
yes.
And should the child then be removed?
Mm-hmm. Then I'd like to go to a different type of abuse that of late you see children are subjected to.
Mm.
In fact, quite scary, and that is the access to internet, pornography, selfies that they're taking,
mm.
exposing body parts, being involved on a level of sexual interaction in terms of social media that's far beyond the experience of the child. And perhaps hold the thought, because I'd like for you to answer that in terms of what your experience is, how do you work with those cases, but also some guidance while we are on this topic to parents who could be listening at the moment, because I think this is so real. Selfie has become the new thing on the block, and exchanging photos or putting it on as your profile pic that people can take it from there and do whatever they feel
yes.
they would like to do with it. About child abuse to Childline, and my guest is Michelle Skippers. I'm Shahida Kali. So the question asked was, our children these days have been subjected to pornography, the taking of selfies, social media, requests to send photos, take a photo of your private parts and send it to me. These are things done by children as young as 7 and 8 and 9 years old. And that's the experience that I've had, and even in my practice.
Mm.
But let's listen and get a sense of, your experience at Childline. Please, Michelle.
Okay. So this is growing.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is growing. And we all know, like you said, selfie is the big thing. Everybody
yeah.
is taking selfies.
Yeah.
But I think children are not aware of the ramifications or the consequences of actually taking a naked picture.
Yeah.
So a child would be asked by a friend, by a boyfriend, send me a naked picture of yourself. And the child would possibly not put much thought into that.
Of course.
And be thinking that, okay, my boy, because they have a relationship. Firstly, I trust this person. We're in a relationship. So the child has the perception this is going to stay between the two of us.
Yes.
Girl sends boy the naked picture. Boy
yeah.
shows his friends, distributes it to his friends,
yeah.
posts it on Facebook.
Yeah.
Now imagine what happens. The whole country has seen, other children at school has seen, mm-hmm. mom has found out about this.
Yeah.
The child is completely humiliated.
Yeah.
So we are have been, we've been getting a lot of requests on informing children about the dangers of technology as well, so that they can make informed choices, so that they can be informed. So we also have the Films and Publication Act, which we are centering our programs on, going into schools and informing them that the moment you take a picture and you send it out, you're distributing it. So you're manufacturing, you're distributing it. You are also committing some form of an offense because you're distributing it knowingly. But I mean, so they sometimes don't know. So we need to inform them, because it's almost like if you know better, you will maybe do better. So they don't know. And because they have so much faith in these people, faith in the boyfriend or the friend or whatever, and they're naive and they're trusting, they kind of get cornered in situations of sending because I want to please. But parents as well, when we're speaking about parents, children as young as 8, 7 years old are having cell phones, Shahida. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yes.
Parents need to have control of that. Yes, you're giving your child a cell phone for whatever reason it be. Sometimes it's for new, you need it for communication purposes as well.
Yes.
But you can put on certain blocks.
Yeah.
So that your child doesn't go on pornographic sites. But I also think that more such information, that there's some discussion should be given to parents, because possibly they don't know how they can block their children from doing that. How can how can they control their children's
the
interaction or their access to the internet? They don't know. So we need to actually, that is something that we need to speak about. We need to have conversation about that.
Yes.
So that the parents can know, so that they can make wiser decisions, and so that they can prohibit, have some form of control.
Yeah.
Parents need to have control over what their children are doing.
Yeah. And so just a question on this.
Yes.
When, for example, a parent is intentionally or consciously leaving pornographic material around on the computer, on the laptop, the books and the videos and the whatever else that, that would take the form of pornographic material, you speak with us about the fact that it actually is a criminal offense.
It is a criminal offense. And you see, what makes it a criminal offense that you just mentioned are intentionally.
Yes.
So the parent intentionally, is the parent doing it intentionally or intentionally, or is the parent doing it, when you say intentionally, actually, what do you mean by that?
Intentionally, you know what? The parent knows that this laptop the child works on. When the when the child opens the laptop, they don't even have to go into a program. The pornography is immediately on the screen.
Yes. So,
you know?
Yeah.
Or
there
are
carelessness.
The pornographic videos and books and pictures and whatever would be in the drawers in which the children will be working. So it's not put aside or locked away in a safe so that only the parents will do whatever they're doing with it, but they are making it readily available, consciously knowing that their children will have access to it. I worked with a boy who would have access to pornographic material the entire day alone at home. So when he was at home, parents would leave him, and you know, he would amuse himself with the stuff on the TV, and a lot of that would then become pornographic material.
Sure.
Because children are curious.
Yes.
You know, and children can be drawn into this type of watching, and you know, the curiosity about stuff that they don't know because they haven't experienced it, but now they are seeing it. But I think it was just important for you to confirm that it's actually a criminal offense if there is neglect of it.
It is a criminal offense, but now how do we prove that? So if the child comes and child discloses that, then obviously we would need to have a conversation with mom, firstly, and explain to her that what she is doing is a criminal offense.
And then just another, I wanted to refer to a message that I'd received on our WhatsApp line, and the person asks, why is it that nowadays the perpetrators more and more is known to the victim? Your comment on that, please.
It's never been nowadays. It's always been that way. I think it's even in my time of working at Charlotte and the cases that we that I see, more than 80%, if not 90%, of the alleged perpetrators is known to the child, is known to the victim. So that is a myth. It's always been that way.
It's always been that
way.
It's always mostly been a person whom the child has trusted. You know, I just remember a child that I worked with, and the father figure, the father had passed on, and how the father figure just lured the child into his home. But she trusted, she loved this person so much. And the trauma, she was actually hospitalized. I saw her in hospital. It's just the case in point that comes to mind. I've received another message that I'd like to read very quickly. It says, us as parents really need to make an intention to move away from telling the kids they are old-fashioned when asking questions. We must start talking to kids about the difference between private parts and body parts. Not always easy, but critically important. The person continues to say, I'm so passionate about the topic. Your guest should also have topics on teen dating violence. Right?
That's
very, very important, and we certainly will focus on teen dating violence, absolutely, because we know what an important topic this is to have.
That's the relevant, that issue. Yeah. That is what children are grappling with. I love that. I'm seeing she's a mother. I love her perspective on parents moving away to have an open conversation about sexuality.
Right. Yes. Yes. And also, like she says, you know, speak with them about the different body parts.
Yes.
The other thing, too, that we would have known in education, and you would concur with me, is how to speak with and get a sense from the children of the different words and names they use for body parts. So that we don't shy away from, you use that word, and then the children would have been used to using that word. So that you actually also speak with the child that includes the words and the grammar that the child would have learned from elsewhere.
True. So when we do our programs, we would usually ask the children, so what do you call your private part?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
What do you call for the boys, what do you call your private part? And then they would say their names. Pee-pee, Tolly, you know, the names, the usual names. And then we would say, yes, that is the names. And then we would educate them on what the proper name is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not saying that they cannot use that name, but just educating them on that, what the proper name is for girls and boys' private parts.
Yeah.
But that's so important. And you need to be comfortable with whatever that child calls his or her private parts.
Yes.
Because when a child mentions a word that is maybe just shocks you.
Yeah.
You need to be very, especially if you're working with children, you need to be conscious of your own beliefs and check yourself, on your own beliefs and what your perception of sexuality is, and be open to that you're gonna get some graphic information, and that you shouldn't be scared the child when the child is at a point of sharing openly with you, but that you should have a demeanor of acceptance, non-judgmental, and the child and realizing that children has their own form of dialogue. So you need to get to that child's level, and that using simple language with children. So it's a very you mentioned earlier about a specialized field. You need a special skill when working with children, but it's beautiful also.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, giving the child the sense that I'm being listened to, I have a voice, I'm being believed. Someone's paying attention to this particular experience that I've had is just so critically important. Now, we have about 5 minutes left over in our program. What I'd like is, because we touched, I mean, we spoke very broadly, really. And what I'd like is perhaps to just move back now and say, in the last 5 minutes, if a child has been traumatized, a child might have witnessed a murder, a hijacking, you know, very, very traumatic event, even a parent being beaten up terribly, terribly in, you know, in their presence and so, what would be your guidance in terms of what would be good steps to take for the carer in that immediate situation? The child has now been traumatized. I want to contain the child. What is helpful for me? And what would be, like you said, the demeanor of that parent?
Okay.
Please.
So you mentioned quite a big word, containing the child. So depending on in what emotional state the child is the child crying? Is your child very angry, very aggressive? Acknowledging the child's feeling, acknowledging that I can see that what you have witnessed or what you have gone through has been quite painful for you. It's hard for you. I can see that you're very sad. Acknowledging that. And what you saw, what you witnessed, or what you went through is not right. But I'm here for you. And being conscious of your tone of voice, being conscious of your facial expression, being conscious of the body, your body language. Is it open? Is it receptive? Is it making a child feel safe? The child just wants to fall into your arms and just wants, and if the child wants to be held, you can do that as well. So that's for the parent, to not, you know, make it seem like whatever the child is experiencing, whatever behavior the child is experiencing, that don't disregard that. Or say, oh, you're just being naughty. Oh, you're overreacting.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Or stop the crying.
Yeah. This is now unnecessary. Yeah. You've been crying for how long? It wasn't so bad what you saw.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
But then getting help for that child. So if you're noticing that the child is either digressing. And child is, you know, like I've mentioned before, teachers are starting to complain. You noticing changes in your child, because parents, they spend the most time. They should, at least, I mean, rather say they should. They should be the experts of their children. So they should be so engaged that you can see that my child is having a bad day. My child is acting differently. If I see this being carried on for a long period of time, get help for their child. What they could do, so Children has a toll-free number that children can call if they are going through anything traumatic or making them sad or making them unhappy, that parents can call, that educators can call. And I don't know, Shahida, if you do have the number.
Which please is, give it to
can
me.
Can I give you the number?
Please.
So we have a special song. We go to schools. We teach the children this number. So I'm going to just, you know, just do the little routine
please
that we do.
Please do that.
Okay. So the number goes like this. So it's 0800 55555. 0800 55555. That's a toll free number.
Okay. And toll free number meaning if they phone from a telecom line, that it's completely free.
Cell phone free.
Cell phone free as well. I wasn't aware of that, actually. Well, that's brilliant.
It is brilliant.
But, and again, I just want to say thank you so much. It's been a stunning program. And I think, you know, one of the things that I also wanted to add is, parents to be aware of if your child is distressed and distraught, for you to contain yourself, that you also not, you know, completely anxious, but you're trying to calm your child down. So I think for parents also to know, in containing my child, I need to be as contained as possible.
That's a very good point.
Because I know it's some, and you know what one experiences is. As much as we are trained, as much as we would have thought it through, if there is trauma happening, you are not always responding in the way that you would have responded. I always take a case in point that I'd like to mention because it was about me. My child was run over by a car. And so I am trained how to cope and how to do this, that, and the other. And you don't just pick up a child and move the child out of the road because the child could have broken their neck and their backs and their whatever. And I promise you on this day, and I see the accident happening, and Michelle, I run and I pick up my child and I carry my child out of the way. And I'm schooled and trained to say, first check the child out before you move the child. And really that was such a learning curve for me, how we have to remind ourselves that when something happens to our children, we have to try to remain as calm as possible to manage the situation in the best of way.
Yes.
So that is just my example of how it is easy to just lose it under certain circumstances. But I want to say thank you. In a million, it's been a great program, and I hope to speak with you very soon. We'd like to speak on, as you mentioned off the air, engaged parenting. I think we need to do the topic of teen dating violence. critically important topics to have. Technological dangers, you know, search engines that should be blocked, etc., and ways of doing that. I thank you very much and good evening.
Thank you, Shaida, for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's my pleasure. It was wonderful to have you. I've been speaking with Michelle Skippers, who is a social worker from Childline or at Childline. It's been a stunning program. Next week, we will continue to have our focus on child abuse. So I'd like you to tune in again.